blocks virtual memory. So the last chunk is reserved. We don't mess with it. That's where I/O stuff happens. So I've got three segments. This is a page segmentation scheme. There are three segments per process, fixed. Page segmentation says you can have any number of segments per process, and they can be of variable sizes. These guys decided we'll have only three, and it'll be a fixed size of 1 gigabyte. And that's about it. It keeps things very clearly and clean. And so the segment table has three entries, and they are stored in three registers. And they are called P0BR, P1BR, SBR. And that's my segment table. And these are stored in three registers. And every process has these three registers are process specific. Every process has three registers or a table private to itself, except the SBR pointer, which points to the system page table, is shared by all processes. So there's full sharing of the system area. So what happens in while the process is executing, no, I shouldn't say P0. I should say X0 executes. This is X0's P0 segment. This is X0's P1 segment, and this is the sys segment. And so this guy has code data heap, and stack. And this all belongs to X0, and stack belonging to X0. And X0 is executing, and it has its three registers, P0BR, P1BR, SBR. The BR stands for base register. And there are three page tables of this process. These page tables are stored in the system area. If it switches to process X1, then X1's P0 segment, X1's P1 segment, and the system segment is the same one. So this contains the operating system, this contains the operating system. So as we do context switching, the operating system moves into the process space because there's only one copy of that. And these segments change. This contains P0's code data in heap. This contains P0's stack. The stack is at the bottom. The heap is at the top. They're approximately little less than 2 gigabytes away. And so there's a lot of space to grow. And that's kind of an engineering solution to all this bumping into each other. It limits you not to be able to share any simple little segment between here and there, but that seems to be not that needed. And this became quite an important way of organizing memory because it's so simple, straightforward, easy to implement. Okay, to go further into like what our memory structures use, present-day processors and this, we'll go back to paging. Okay, there's segmentation, there may be VAX architectures, more complicated architectures, whatever it is. Let's just start with paging again. And the purest form of paging would be one set of pages per process. Pure paging means you're just using paging and you're not doing... And there's a certain number of entries in that page table. It typically doesn't change, although it can change it. And these entries must point to appropriate frames of the memory. The frames are in RAM. The deal is that that sounds obvious that all the pages must be in RAM. Those addresses that are there, the frame numbers must be valid frame numbers. That's what we said. Why would it be any different? It would be different if you don't have enough memory. Can we handle systems where the amount of memory needed by processors is larger than the memory available in RAM? And the answer is yes, and that's called virtual memory. So in paging, everything has to be in memory. However many pages a process uses, it has to be in memory. Now, it's obvious that if you are running a system with 2 gigabytes per process, and you have 100 processes, even today we don't have 200 gigabytes of main memory. So that's just not possible. So even back then, whenever demand paging was introduced, people went with, okay, virtual memory is the use of memory that doesn't exist. So we need to play some games with memory like we do with CPU. Doesn't matter how many physical cores you have, we pretend you've got 100 CPUs because that's what threads are. So that's virtual processing. So in virtual memory systems, virtual memory systems allow you to use very large amounts of memory and not have enough RAM. So you go to RAM is cheap, why don't we put in more RAM? No, it doesn't matter. However cheap RAM is, often programmers write programs that are rather big and all of them put together doesn't fit in. In fact, it's fine if it doesn't fit in. There is a property of programs and just read about this, there are stories. I can't depict this visually, but let's say we have a lot of pages that this process has acquired because it's doing lots of mallocs and things like that, as well as it has a large static data area where you've declared rather large megabytes of arrays. And then when you run it, really, it is not using that much memory actively. You'll notice these are the set of pages that it has allocated, but it only runs a small part of the code over and over again, which accesses maybe these two pieces of memory. So a working set of a process might be, over time, it is at one point, it is over here, and over here. And as time progresses, we notice that the program jumped to a different location for code and started using this guy and this guy. And that continued for a while, and then we go back to this, this, and this maybe. And you can find charts talking about memory access patterns of the process. And in which case, at any point in time, it's using a very small number of pages, although it has a very large page size. And this is very common. It's not like what if. It's like this is what happens when normal human beings write normal programs, even if they are very data-intensive programs, they have a shifting working set going through the memory. So the idea of virtual memory is that, look, we should just keep those pages that is being actively worked on in memory and not have the rest of them allocated to something else. When the working set changes, we shuffle things around and we just keep the amount of memory used by a process small. And that way we can accommodate more processes, have decent performance and everything. And that's called virtual memory. Now, how do we implement virtual memory is a different story. This is the idea. So when virtual memory was implemented and was being developed, people came up with all kinds of ideas on how to do it. And everything converged to this one thing called demand paging. Demand paging works so good that nothing else competes. Demand paging and virtual memory has become the same thing. It's not. Virtual memory is the concept. Demand paging is the implementation. One could think about many different ways of doing virtual memory, but there's no competitor to demand paging. That's why demand paging and virtual memory is considered to be the same thing. Okay, so what is demand paging? We won't worry about what else methods, they don't work very well. So we keep a certain number of pages in main memory, and so the program has 100 pages. I will keep, let's say, 5 pages in RAM and 95 pages in swap space on disk. How do we know which 5 pages? Okay, we don't. I'm just saying. Somehow we figure out. I'll talk about how we figure out. So a certain number of pages will be in memory, certain number will be in swap space, which means the entire program is indeed somewhere, the entire process is indeed somewhere. It's split between disk and memory. The idea being disks can be much, much bigger than memory. We can accommodate any amount of storage on disk as long as we have a big enough swap space. If we run out of swap space, you're using too much memory, it won't work. So as long as we have adequate swap space, we can put all the processes on swap space, which is really a reflection or a copy of what should be in memory but isn't. So the way I would explain this is that so let's say we have 100 pages. I create a mental or a, in RAM image of what should the memory look like. Like it, code goes here, so I create some sort of a data structure, and from that I create a page table. There are 100 pages here. What are the contents of these pages? I get it from the executable. I initialize the stack. I throw in some empty space. There's a whole bunch of things I need to do, so I create a page table. Where are these pages in main memory? It's not there. I don't put anything in main memory. I link up the page table to the addresses on disk. A disk contains sector addresses where these page images are, and that's where I put the executable code and the global data and the contents of the stack and heap and everything is on disk. It will not execute. I put all the disk addresses in the page table. And then I attempt to run the system. It won't work. It'll think this is a frame address and it'll get all confused. So we need to play more games with the page table. We have to put a flag in the page table saying this address is not to be used. This is a disk address, not a frame address, which is what paging uses, frame addresses, not disk addresses. Virtual memory uses disk addresses and frame addresses. So we add another bit to the page table. Called the valid bit. So the page table, the paging hardware is augmented to recognize that the page table entries contain valid bits. Valid bits are set to 1 if that page table entry is a frame address and it points to RAM. Yes.
So each disk address on the page table, will it point to a chunk of memory? It'll
point to one block of disk. Yes, it'll be the same size as on RAM and on disk. The point is RAM is much harder to come by than disk. So it's cheaper way of storing things. The other point is disk is a lot slower than RAM. And disk, you cannot execute from disk. It has to be in RAM to execute. So this is a backup store. So I put everything in disk because I don't know which ones to put in RAM. So then I will figure out which ones to put in RAM. Okay? So I mark all the valid bits as zero. I put in a bunch of disk address. My process is ready to go, except there's nothing in RAM. When a process executes, the interaction between the CPU and the memory consists of really a load and a store. You say fetch. Fetch is a load. So it's a fetch or load or a store. That's how data gets transferred between CPU and memory, and the execution happens in the CPU. So you start the program at the main program, main routine. The CPU will try to fetch the first instruction. Where does it get it from? From the start address of the program, which is a logical address. This logical address is pointing to some page table entry, whatever the page number of that address is. So the paging hardware has access to the page table. It knows the page number that you're fetching from or loading from or storing to. Goes to look up that page table entry to the logical and physical address translation. Before it even looks here, it looks at the valid bit. If the valid bit is 1, it continues normal paging. That is, it's in memory. I'm just going to replace the page number with the frame number and off I go. So the valid bit, 1, is normal. And if the valid bit is 0, the situation is called a page fault. Page fault is not a fault. Page fault is a common occurrence in every operating system, which says the CPU accessed a page which is not in memory. So we have to do something about it. And a page fault generates a page fault interrupt. Why don't we do something about it now? This is difficult to explain. So let's say my program consists of a bunch of opcodes. Let's say the first opcode I'm executing is load X followed by load Y. Load X is an instruction stored in memory, except that it's not, because we are using virtual memory. So this program counter here, when we try to go get X, it'll go to the page table and find the valid bit is equal to 0. And at that point, we have gone into hardware which detected this. Now, the hardware has to find the page and load it. The hardware has no idea where the page is, how to load it. That's not the hardware's job. That's the operating system's job. Because the operating system has the device drivers, has the knowledge of the page table maps and the disk maps and the all kinds of... So this has to be done in software. That software to do this is missing over here. There's no software to load pages. This is your straight line binary. So this detection by hardware that my valid bit is zero must be sent to some operating system routine which will take care of it. So that's why we raise an interrupt here. The hardware sends an interrupt signal to the CPU. The CPU so it transfers control to the page fault interrupt handler. The page fault interrupt handler is a very crucial part of an operating system, and it better be in memory. In fact, loading an operating system, we put the entire operating system kernel in memory. It does not work off of virtual memory. There are some techniques where you can make it work off of virtual memory, but just assume that the operating system is always in memory. So the page fault handler does not generate page faults. It goes and executes code whole bunch of things happen. The interrupt handler goes and finds where the backing store is, where the material is. It has to find a free frame in memory, so it has access to tables saying which RAM frames are free at this point and which are not. If you don't find free frames in memory, that's another discussion of page replacement, which I'm not going there right now. Finds a free frame in memory, and then it copies the disks to RAM. This copy operation is a disk operation through a device driver. So it looks like the program called the page fault handler, and now it's doing I/O. When it's doing I/O, it's an I/O burst. So now other processes should be allowed to use the CPU. So there is context switching that happens here. This is an I/O burst. This particular process is not executing. Some other process comes in and uses the CPU. When this I/O burst is complete, then the disk image has been put inside the RAM. Then the page table entry here has to be changed to the frame address of the RAM. The valid bit is set to zero. And you've got to restart the instruction. You've got to set the program counter back one step because it has already advanced one more, and do the instruction again. Now, early systems had a lot of problems with restarting instructions. Today we don't. In fact, in a complex instruction set like Intel, a instruction has really many sub-instructions. And if there's a page fault because you're doing bulk moves of data, you may execute part of the instruction and then get a page fault. And then you've got to restart the instruction in the middle of the instruction. All kinds of nasty stuff, but thankfully the hardware has support for that. So it all works out. So this whole virtual memory mechanism has an influence on hardware design and microcode context and all kinds of things, which we are not going to worry about. The hardware should be capable of restarting an instruction. Yes?
So how is the disk address passed to the
interrupt handler? Is the interrupt handler gets the address of the page table entry that caused the interrupt.
Using the program counter?
using some register. Wait, how does it get it? You get a page fault. It is part of the... There may be a register in the MMU saying this thing caused it. So the interrupt handler can look up where, why was this page fault? Where in the page table caused it? And then it can go and find that address. It just needs that address, and it knows the struct of the page table, so it can pull out the disk address from there. Okay. So now if I start a program with nothing in RAM, it's going to page fault right away. And it's going to bring in a page that it needs. And then that'll be a code page. And if it's load X, the code fetch will cause a page fault. The execution of load X will access X, which is not in memory, will cause a page fault. Then that will get loaded, the instruction will be restarted, then load X will happen correctly, and load Y will happen fine, because most likely X and Y is on the same page, so both of these are loaded. If not, we'll get another page fault. So the program will stutter in the beginning. There'll be lots of page faults. Eventually, the program will access enough data and code that the working set will come to memory. And then it goes full speed. It doesn't get any page faults. Okay? Now it's running. As it's running and its working set changes because it made a call to some function somewhere far away, which will run for a while, use a different set of data, again it will stumble. It will page fault a bunch. More pages will come in. And as it executes, it brings in more and more pages. Until now, then we'll have a situation where it's brought in all these pages, but it's not using them. And then the RAM starts filling up. So we need to worry about how do we shrink the process, because it's getting too big, but it's not using the pages. Now, I'm looking at it from the point of view of one process. One process is bringing up too many pages. Leave it alone. Let it run. It'll run faster. It'll keep on doing this thing. But if you've got lots of processes, they will start bumping into each other. The memory, the free memory amount is going to grow, shrink. At some point, a parameter in the operating system kicks in saying that the memory usage has reached a high water mark. Now the rest of the free memory that's available, we should not start filling them up because they can fill up very quickly. I need to know what to throw out and start throwing things out. So I can keep moving things out as new and as processes bring in pages. How do I know what things to move out? I will discuss three policies, page replacement policies. Page replacement policies is when you think you need to free up memory, or you can go the complete lazy approach. I never replace a page until my memory is completely full. And then, if there's a page fault and there's no memory available, I first throw out something and pull the new one in. Generally, that's not a good idea, but it's the same rules. You decide whether you will start throwing out memory when only 10% is left or when 0% is left. That's up to the tweaking of the operating system. So how do you decide which page to replace? So we need to choose a victim to throw out. This is the same thing as cache replacement. FIFO needs no explanation. First page in, first page out. That means initially when the system loaded up, there was a first page. I'm not talking about that page. As the system's running, pages have been thrown out, brought in. At the current point, there is these millions of pages in memory. Which one is the oldest page? We'll throw that one out. That would be FIFO.
Clarification, when you say you're throwing out a page, are you moving it back to disk?
Moving it back to disk. Now, assume you're moving it back to disk. Some pages can be just chucked because they're read-only. They're code pages. The disk copy is still there. So that's called, do we actually write it out to disk or we just chuck it? That's an optimization. So assume we write it out to disk. So FIFO, first page in, first part. So, okay. Optimal is the best policy. Nothing can be better. Why don't we use that? There's a problem with that. The problem kind of is that this, I'll show why we don't use it. It kind of performs poorly. This performs marvelously, but we have no idea how to implement it. This performs kind of okay, but this is also hard to implement. So page replacement is not very easy. Why don't we like FIFO? FIFO is very fair, very nice, very easy. You remember, like, we've never liked FIFO for anything. So people give out a bunch of reasons why we don't like FIFO. The number two and number three are like, really, those are made up reasons. But number one is definitely of use. There are pages that are in use and will be in use, very heavily referenced pages. Eventually, since they get age out, the turn to get thrown out happens. So you throw it out, and it immediately page faults bring it back in. You've just wasted time throwing it out. You might as well throw out something else. Then there is this concocted thing called Belady's anomaly, which I'll explain. I don't think that's greatly important, but it's interesting. And it's not a stack policy. A stack policy says if you've got this many pages and you're running, what if you increase the number of pages? You should have the same set of pages in memory plus a few more. It shouldn't be a completely different set. That is, as you grow and shrink the amount of pages you're going to keep in memory, the smaller size should be a subset of the larger size. That makes sense. Anything else doesn't make sense. So I'll show you how the stack policy kind of says, okay. Let's say we are running a process which uses the page 1 first, then it uses page 2, then it uses page 3, then 4, then 1, then 2, then 5, then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is called a page reference train. That means it hit those pages in that order, and each page may have been hit multiple times, we don't care. We're like, what distinct pages did it hit? Let's say we're going to keep 3 pages in main memory, and all of this are on disk. So if I'm going to run it with 3 pages, I'm going to bring in 1, 2, and 3. There'll be 3 page faults. Okay? Then 4 will generate a page fault again. And now I can't keep 4 pages, so FIFO says throw away 1. Then 1 will generate a page fault, I'll throw away 2. I'll bring in 2, and I'll throw away 3. Then I'll bring in 5, I'll throw away 4. Then one is already in there, 2 is already in there, 3, I will throw away 1, 4, I will throw away 2, 5 is already in there. Okay? This is a way of hand calculating how many page faults. How many page faults? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay? What if I have 4 pages? I'll bring 1, 2, 3, 4. 1 is in there, 2 is in there, 5, 1 goes away. 1, 2 goes away, 2, 3 goes away, 3, 4 goes away, 4, 5 goes away. How many page faults? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I didn't gain anything. And the set of pages in memory are different from the 3 pages. And in 5 pages, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 5. Oh, I made a mistake here. 5 is here. This is, there'll be another page fault. This will be 10. I have to bring in 5. 5 went away. 4, 5. Oh, I made a mistake here. This is not correct. Yeah. Okay, so this is 10. And then in 5 pages, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's only 5 pages, so 5 page faults. If you keep 5 in main memory, that'll be pretty good. There'll be only 5. So you cannot have less than 5 page faults. If you have 4 pages, you have 10 page faults. If you have 3 pages, you have 9 page faults. That makes no sense. If you reduce the number of pages you keep, you have lower page faults, your page faults should be higher.
I thought you were right, 4 pages.
I had 4 pages. When I brought in the 5th page, I crossed out 1. And then I had to bring in 1. Yeah. There are 3 pages in memory at any time in the first string, 4 pages in memory at any time, 5 pages in memory.
I think we lost the last one where I had to bring in 5 and
Yeah, there are five of them. But there were five page faults.
But it's supposed to be four, and he means to like on the fourth.
Yeah, the first one is a page fault. Because there was nothing in memory when I started. Okay, so this is Belady's anomaly, that 3 to 4 increases the number of page faults.
I emailed you guys last weekend. It's an 8-step. They told me that I was sick.
Okay, I will need the documentation.
Okay, yeah.
And then you'll have to schedule a time with the TA, or maybe I can get somebody to do that, and you'll get a special exam.
You want me to contact the TA and give him the notes?
No, I get the notes.
Okay, I'll come to your office.
Or you can email it to me.
Okay,
take a picture, email it to me, and I will arrange. But you'll have to keep reminding me. I keep forgetting.
I don't find my grade of my project to grade page. So should I still wait?
No, don't wait.
So you mean I'm not submit specifically?
Maybe there was an error. You submitted it?
Yeah, I already submit on time. So
okay. In that case, it should be there. Talk to any of the graders during their office hours. They have access to all the submitted projects. They should be able to find it.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
The former is the same as the midterm?
Yeah.
Or the multiple choice?
No, part one will be same as the midterm. Part two may have a few multiple choice questions.
Okay, for next class.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And in course anything?
Anything, yeah.
Okay.
The page one would be crossed out, right? Because there's already four of them, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, okay, the one should be crossed out? Yeah. But that really doesn't matter
since
because it's ending,
one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that's crossed out, but it's still, what I'm looking for is how many page fault. It still remains 10.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it suffers, so first in, first out suffers from what again?
Belady's anomaly. This is what it is. Wait, I mean, as you increase the number.
How do you spell that? Belady's something?
Wait. It's in the book. That's a name.
Okay, can you erase that? I wrote that down already.
Okay. So I won't erase it. This is part of the Belady's anomaly. Okay.
Okay. Is this an example of Belady's anomaly?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
And this is from the book, straight from the book.
Oh.